Good evening, everybody. Tonight we're going to try something a little bit different with Uncovering Midrash. We're going to be trying to figure out an answer to a question that I have, and hopefully we will. And I could not find an explicit Midrash addressing this possibility. So what we're going to be going with is we're going to be doing what so we're going to be going through what exactly. First, I'll ask the question, then we'll see how we get to the answer, and we'll see if people like the answers or not. It's going to be interactive, so please, let's jump in. Okay, so I'm going to be sharing screen. Yeah, I'm going to be switching between a PowerPoint as well as between the Sukkim themselves. So please let me know if any point is unclear, or if you need help finding things, just let me know and I will gladly just switch it around. Okay, here we go. So, question being, what if Yosef held himself back? Right? So what does that question mean? So everybody's in background on what I mean. Okay? Here we go. So what's with those pesukim? So trying to figure out what I mean by Yosef holding himself back. So when we get to the big reveal scene that's coming through Parsha, then we see, right, Yosef could not hold himself back. Loyal kol Yosef lehitapek. So my question is, what if Yosef did hold himself back? So the obvious question is, what on earth does that mean? Right? What was he holding himself back from? Right? That's the first question people should be asking. Right? What does Litapik mean? So luckily, this isn't the first time this has happened. So here we go. Let me stop a second. Get to do a new share. Here we go. So let's. So Everybody sees what I'm showing now? Okay, good. So we're going to be going through the psukim here. So the first case, we'll probably go through primarily through here until we get to the Mefarshim, and then I'll be summarizing it elsewhere. Okay? So here we go. So this whole thing starts from Yosef's first time seeing the brothers. So what do I mean by that? So we have the brothers going down to get food from Egypt, right? Yosef is currently in charge of all of Mitzrayim, but the brothers don't know that. So, right, so they're coming down, and then they bow. And then we see, and Yosef was governor over the land, right? We're in verse 6. Okay? And then we see that it was, right? And then Joseph's brethren came down and bowed down to him their faces to the earth. So now, and Yosef saw his brethren, and he knew them, but made himself strange unto them, and spoke with them roughly, and he said unto them, whence come ye? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. And Yosef knew or recognized his brethren, but they knew him not. Right, and Yosef remembered the dreams which he dreamed of them and said to them, you are spies, see the niggers of the land, you have come. So the question is, so there's a lot of Yosef recognizing, remembering, and thinking, and in fact, if you were to actually look at Targum Oklos on verse 9, right?
Can't we wait with this? I want to watch Chaim.
Okay, Grandma, I'm muting you. I'm on mute whenever when you're ready. Okay, all right. Okay. Okay. Thanks, Grandma. Okay. So basically, so when we say that, right, when we say that, when we have that, right, we have Yosef recognizing the brothers don't recognize him. He's thinking very hard. We have his inner thought process, his inner remembering. So the question is, what's going on in Yosef's head? So for this, I'd like to ask the audience, what do we think Yosef's doing now? What was he thinking when he when he said, when he decided to accuse the brothers of being spies. Why would he do this? It requires interaction.
He was getting back at them?
One option is revenge. So the only problem is that if he's getting back at them, well, then why is he being very nice about it, right? He seems to be relatively nice in terms of the revenge, and it's super drawn out.
He wanted to see if they were
just took it out.
Right? So the other option is it to see...
Wait, we drank it a second ago. I just took it out.
Okay. Sorry. Are we done, Elaine?
What? Did you hear what I said?
You said, like, Abarbanel, that he tried to get them to do tshuva, right?
Right. And to see if they regretted what they had done.
Right, see if they regretted, right. So that's the Abarbanel, right? His goal was getting them to repent. Right, that was his whole problem, the whole thing. Very good. Okay, so what are the other other options? What was his initial thought here? Why was he doing this? Right, we have potential revenge plot. We have get them to repent. Any other possibilities?
He wanted to see how they were treating Binyamin, who was the other brother from Rachel.
Right, he's deciding, should I kill them or not? Right. He's like deciding, do I like my brothers or not like my brothers? He's like, yeah, let's see. So there's another option, right? Which is given by Ramban, is that emphasizing the fact that Yosef remembers his dreams, that Yosef is trying to fulfill his dreams, right? He notices brothers bowing. Wait a minute, I remember this, right? I had a dream about this, and wait a minute, it's coming true. Right? Or not fully coming true. It's coming true-ish. Right? Ramban says, well, here he remembers the dreams, but none of them haven't been fulfilled yet, and now he's going to set about making sure that they all come true. So the question would be, well, why would you want the dreams to come true? Like, why would they be beneficial? The Ramban, right? I want to fulfill the dreams. What end could that have for us? How could it be helpful? So one option is that there's simply merit in fulfilling a nevuah, right? God said so. Yosef has no idea why he's doing this, but it's going to be helpful. So that's why he does it, right? God gave me these dreams and they're prophetic in nature, and clearly by fulfilling these dreams, it'll be better for the Jewish people. So it's a little hard to swallow. So the Sfarno gives another option, and that not only is it that, but it's that by fulfilling the dreams, it'll help the Jews moving forward. Because Ma'aseh Avot Siman Labanim, what the forefathers do will indicate the future for their descendants. So by Yosef fulfilling these conditions, it'll be better in the long run for the Jews. So this is still, again, I'm sure this is all very confusing, right? We have a whole bunch of options of what Yosef's doing. Okay, so the first thing we have, Yosef has some sort of plan. What is that plan is unclear. Right, it's some complex plan involving the brothers and making them go through certain steps that parallels what has gone through Yosef as well as what goes on in his dreams. And the question is, where is he getting to? Okay? So this, right, but we still haven't explained what on earth, we still the question of why do we have Yosef then saying, why couldn't he heal himself back? How does that relate to his plan here? So we still don't quite see, but we see a little bit, right? So after his initial accusing of the brothers, and they say, oh, no, we're not spies, he says, prove it, and, you know, and send somebody back to bring another brother to verify your story. He throws them in jail, and now we see the inner thinkings of the brothers. So what do the brothers say? Somebody care to read the brothers' inner thought bubble? They think this is their inner thought bubble, by the way. They think they're just talking amongst themselves. Okay, that's the premise here. So what do they say? So who'd like to read what the brothers' thought process was going on during this time? Right? We don't know Yosef's. We know that Yosef is being deliberately make things harder for them. We're not sure how.
Okay, I agreed.
Okay.
And they said to one another, "We are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the distress of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore, in this distress, come upon us."
Right? So they're basically saying that it's their fault. All the bad stuff now is because we didn't properly protect our brother. Okay? And then we have Reuven acting a little childish, saying, "I told you so." Right? So, and they knew not that Yosef understood them, for the interpreter was between them. So as far as the Vayita Peik, we get our first hint of what Vayita Peik is now. Okay? We see that in verse 24. Okay? Elaine, continue, please.
24?
Mm-hmm.
"And he turned himself about from them and wept, and he returned to them and spoke to them, and took Shimon from among them and bound him before their eyes."
Okay, so now, so what looks out of place in what happens in this dastardly plan of Yosef? Let's say if he was doing the revenge plot, what doesn't fit?
That he wept.
Right? He wept. If somebody's busy trying to exact revenge, that, like, why is he crying all of a sudden? Like, what's going on? Right? So one thing you could say is that he wanted to do revenge, and now he decides he changes his mind now. But if he changes his mind, then look what happens next. If he changes his mind and I'm not doing revenge anymore, so what's his next step in the plan? Is that he, right, look at 25.
25, we have to move it up.
Yep, there we go.
There you go. Then Yosef commanded to fill their vessels with corn and to restore every man's money into his sack and to give them provisions for the way. And thus was it done unto them.
Okay, right. So Yosef, for some reason, thinks it's a good idea to give them their money back. So how could this be helpful to give them their money back? What could this mean?
To see how honest they are.
Right, to test their honesty. If we're back to the test, right, we're doing testing. Would this work with the revenge anymore? Would that fit anymore? I don't think so, right? You maybe initially the thought was, let's get revenge. But the revenge is out the window. One is definitely, at this point, even if initially Yosef wanted to, like, you know, be cruel to the brothers, at this stage, it doesn't make sense. Like, how is putting money in their sacks going to have anything to do with revenge? Doesn't seem to fit anymore. So we're left with the other options of fulfilling the dreams and some sort of repentance, right? Some sort of hubris, some sort of, you know, development of the brothers and making them worthy again.
Wait.
Yes.
But he puts money back in their sacks. He could accuse them of stealing.
He already had them in jail. Why is he wasting? What's the point? Meaning, he had every ground, but right now he holds all the power. Once they're in jail, why have them leave only to arrest them again on false charges? He did that once already. Why do the same trick again? Right? Okay. Have them
now. Okay.
What's revenge? Unless you think the revenge, you could say that he's just saying his revenge because he's like, well, I want to involve not just the brothers, but I want to involve Binyamin, who's not here, or perhaps Yaakov, who's not here, or the rest of their families too in this revenge plot. Right, it's not enough just to get my brothers back for what they did to me, the 10 brothers who sold me out. I need to get back to everybody else who may or may not have been involved. So that still is there, but it just seems a lot less vengeful at this point in time. Right, because his plan went less intense also. It went from being one person going to everybody else in jail to being one person in jail and about to be able to go back to bring everybody else down. So like his vengeance plot is getting weak, if it is a vengeance plot. But it's still possible at this point. It looks maybe like it's a vengeance plot. But the problem is, again, if it's a vengeance plot, why is he crying while doing the vengeance plot? So, and that I don't know. Okay. So, I'm also, if anybody's having trouble speaking up, you feel free to write your comments in the chat. Okay. So now let's keep on going now. So, right. So then the next. So now we're gonna fast forward a little bit to right again to when they come back down the next time. Okay, we're gonna leave aside what goes down in the politics of the family, and we're gonna go down to when he sees them again. Here we go. Like, let's get back to see the brothers. Here we go. Now we skip forward. Now we finally have the brothers have come back, right? They finally managed to convince, right? So we didn't just go to film what we skipped. So again, the brothers went back without Shimon. Yaakov is distraught that, you know, can't believe you lost another one of my children. Like, what's wrong with you people? And then he's like, I'm not saying that you guys are not going to get Benjamin back now. You already lost one. Why would you let you lose another kid? Like, this is the third one now. Like, no. Right. And then you know, Yehuda convinces him because the answer is either you might lose Benjamin or we're all going to die. So I'll take care of it. And then, so they go down, right. They bring an extra, a mincha. They bring a, you know, gift, of some sort to appease him. To appease Yosef. They don't know him as his name's not Yosef in the corner of them. They know him as being the Safa Panas, the vizier of Egypt. So what happens? So then we see what happens. Vayavo. Now we see when they arrive there. Okay, now verse 26. Now, who'd like to read the next section? We're now up to the second scene, right? The first meeting with we have scene one and scene one and a half, right? The initial meeting of Yosef and the brothers again, followed by the after they come out of jail and their partial confession. So now they're coming back again, and we're seeing what's going on here. I remember before Adam thought a little bit of place was that Yosef started to cry. So now let's see what happens this time. Is he?
First thing he does is ask if his father's alive.
Right. Just read starting from verse 27.
And he asked them of their welfare and said, "Is your father well? The old man of whom we spoke, is he still alive? Is he yet alive?" And they said, "Thy servant, our father, is well. He is yet alive." And they bowed their head and made obeisance. And he lifted up his eyes and saw Benjamin, his brother, his mother's son, and said, "Is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke unto me?" Again, youngest son, brother. This guy's, who knows how old he is. He's got 10 kids.
Right.
And he said, "God be gracious unto thee, my son." And Joseph made haste, for his heart yearned towards his brother. And he sought where to weep. And he entered into his chambers and wept there. And he washed his face and came out. And he refrained himself and said, "Set on bread." So okay. I think he's refraining himself here from revealing himself.
Right. Do you think refrained means from revealing himself? Okay.
That's and I think it meant before then, too. I mean, he right. loved his brothers,
right?
Even though they did all this stuff,
right? So he's trying to hold himself back from revealing himself, right? That's what you're saying, Beta Peg means, right? Hold himself back from revealing himself. Any other options for what Beta Peg means here? What else are we holding back?
I think holding himself back from crying in front of everybody.
Right, holding back his emotions, right? He's trying to, you know, put on this facade of this powerful, commanding figure, and he doesn't want to break that image. So why wouldn't he want to break that image? So to that, we have the theory of Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, that it's a variation on the Barbanel's approach, that it wasn't simply to make the brothers do tshuva for their actions. It was also to repair the broken relationships between him and his brothers, as well as between him and his father. right? He was trying to find the exact right moment to reveal himself to his brothers and to his father to try and fix all that has been wrong until now, right? So it's not just so his brothers do tshuva, but it's so that it's done tshuva on his own terms, right? So if you would like to read the reverse inside, right? It's reverse on chapter 42, verse 7 and 9. If you speak German, I recommend the German. If not, there's translations both Hebrew and English. Whichever language you're more familiar with, please use that translation, because all translations, just use whichever translation, the language you know the best, because they're all direct translations from German. But yeah, there are slight edits to it in terms of like, in terms of the, you know, sometimes there's a little bit of cleaning up of the language or a little bit of thing, something that's a little controversial. But for this one, it tends to be pretty faithful, the translations. So he says he's trying to hold himself back because he wants to reveal himself at the right time in the right way. So he's doing both. He's holding back his emotions and preventing himself from revealing himself. He's doing both. Okay, so that's reverse. So what is the part that Yosef doesn't want to, definitely is trying to avoid clearly at this point in time? What's he trying to avoid? Crying, breaking down in front of everybody else. That's what he's trying to avoid. So why? Okay, so the why we have so far is it'll show him being weak, right? That's of Hirsch, right? And he wants to reveal himself at the right time from a position of power. Another option is he simply doesn't want to reveal himself yet, right? He doesn't want to reveal himself yet. That's the whole point, right? Or just maybe not reveal himself, but just want to show emotions, because like that's going to ruin the facade and whatever else is going on in his greater plan. Okay, so again, he's holding back his emotions, potentially holding back his identity. The question being, why? Still not super clear. Okay. So then we have, afterwards, we have them having a meal together, and he starts giving five times as much binyamin. Why would he be doing that?
Because he's his, he's the only child from the same mother.
So he's showing, so why, in, until now, we know Yosef's plan, right? To change the status quo, right? Make new tshuva or revenge, right? Or something else, or some other intense scheme. So how does this giving Benjamin more play into each of those? Right? So it seems like he's trying to set up the similar situation to what had happened to him and his brothers, where he got, you know, preferential treatment from Yaakov. And the brothers responded by trying to get rid of Yosef. So he's trying to set up a similar situation, see the little brothers do that or not. Right, that's what it seems like, perhaps. Okay. Right, and then what happens in the next verse? Right, what's the brothers' reactions? Is there any reaction to you getting more? Nothing yet, right? And then Yosef decides, let's up the ante. One more step. So what does Yosef command them to do?
They put the silver goblet in his sack.
Right, he's going to frame Binyamin by placing the silver goblet in his sack. And what's the reaction of the brothers? Oh, I see we have somebody new joining. Okay, so just to catch you up, assuming your audio is currently functioning, great. So then, yeah, we're going through what is Yosef's plan, right? Currently, the options we have is Yosef is either going, he's out for revenge, he's trying to have the brothers repent and do tshuva, he's trying to reset his relationship with his brothers, that's for Hirsch, and, right? And there's also Ramban, if he's still trying to somehow fulfill the dreams. Okay, so those are his potential, what he's trying to do. So now the question is, how does placing the goblet tie in? Okay, so how would framing Binyamin tie into each of those theories? Right? So it fits in pretty well into the, for the revenge plot, it doesn't quite fit so well because it's like, well, why, you know, it seems a very convoluted revenge plot. But it could be that Yosef simply wants to have a very convoluted revenge plot, which is possible. As far as having them do tshuva, right, making them repent for their actions, so how could that work out? Right, why would the false framing of Binyamin help?
He wanted to know how they would feel when Binyamin is in jail, because if they treated him like Yosef, they wouldn't care.
Right, see if they've improved. Right, and it seems like they and it seems like he has, that they have improved then. Or we'll see in a second how their reaction is and if that improves or not. Right, so maybe he's doing something about another round of testing. Okay, so if Yosef is setting up another round of testing, so what happens? And what's the test? Is that he then, of course, you know, after framing them, he sends somebody out to go get them, to chase them down, and to accuse them. Okay, and how do the brothers react to being accused? Yeah, let's start from. Here, from verse 4. Somebody like to care to read English, please? Right? We're currently having it. We have the brothers having left the city, not knowing they're framed. So who would like to read the chase? Anybody here like thriller chase scenes in movies?
And they were gone out of the city. And we're not yet far off. Joseph said unto his steward, up, follow after the men. And when thou dost overtake them, say unto them, wherefore have ye rewarded evil for good? Is not this it in which my Lord drinketh, and whereby he indeed divineth, ye have done evil in so doing? And he overtook them, and he spoke unto them these words. And they said unto him, wherefore speakest my Lord such words as there? Far be it from thy servant that they should do such a thing. First they deny it. Behold, right, the money which we found in our sacks, mouths, we brought back unto thee out of the land of Canaan. How then should we steal out of thy Lord's house silver or gold? With whomever of thy servants it'll be found, let him die, and we also will be my Lord's bondmen, which is a strange statement to make. It doesn't say who's speaking, but it's a strange statement to make. It sounds like Reuven, you know, because when a tzaddik says something bad going to happen, it happens. So, you know, like the same thing that happened with Yaakov and
right
and
right, Yaakov and Raphael, right? Whoever does it is going to be right killed, right? So it sounds like that's setting up right here also. But it seems like, as opposed to what happened last time with Yosef, how do the brothers react to accusation? We haven't gotten back to that part yet. But we're saying that right now, they seem they're acting like Yaakov, which is both good and bad. Because Yaakov's denial of the stealing of the trophim, was that a good thing, or was that good or bad? Right? So
bad,
right? It led to Rachel being cursed. So seemingly they made the same mistake. Now, let's see what happens next.
Then they hastened and took down every man's his sack to the ground, and opened every man his sack, and he searched beginning at the eldest and leaving off at the youngest, and the goblet was found in Benjamin's sack. Right, so they prolonged the agony here, and they went and they rent their clothes and loaded every man his ass and returned to the city. And Yehuda and his brethren came to Yosef's house, and he was yet there, and they fell before him on the ground. And Yosef said unto them, what deed is this that you have done? Know you not that such a man as I will indeed divine? And Yehuda said, what shall we say unto my Lord? What shall we speak? Or how shall we clear ourselves? God hath found out the iniquity of thy servants. Behold, we are my Lord's bondsmen, both we and he also in whose hand the cup is found. And he said, far be it from me that I should do so. The man in whose hand the goblet is found, he shall be my bondsman. But as for you, get you up in peace unto your father. Then Yehuda came near unto him and said, O my Lord, let thy servant, I pray thee, speak a word in my Lord's ears, and let not thine anger burn against thy servant, for thou art even as Pharaoh. Again, he throws an insult at him.
Let's skip a little bit. This is his repeating of the past, right? I'm just going to highlight that he says that, and his brother, right? This is his last child, and a little one, and his brother is dead. Okay? And then he goes through saying how they brought him here, and he says how the father cannot abandon him or he will die. Right? And he's still summarizing events. He said, so and he explains how he has made sure, he explains also how this, what Yaakov thought about the thing, about how Yosef had been torn to pieces. And saying if this one goes away, then saying how Yaakov will also go down, and there's nothing else that he can do, and he'll also, you know, life's over, he loses his child too, and that'll be it. Okay, and then Yehuda takes responsibility on behalf of Binyamin and says, therefore, he says, let me be instead of him. Here, now, therefore, you're from verse 33.
Now, therefore, let my servant, I pray thee, abide instead of a lad, a bondsman to my Lord, and let the lad go up with his brethren. For how shall I go up to my father if the lad be not with me? Lest I look upon the evil that shall come on my father.
Okay. So, right. So we see here, and then the next verse, we get to the Yosef being unable to hold himself back. That's the next verse. So the question is.
But now we're at the next parsha.
Right. We're the next breath. But as far as in the tzipin themselves go, right, they lead right. This is one conversation, right? We switched parsha in the middle here. We got to Vayigash Elav Yehuda in verse. Here was that. That was in verse. Here in verse 18. We technically switched parshas, right, from last week to this week, verse 18. But as far as this is one conversation, right, it doesn't really stop. It's kind of going the whole way, whole way through, right? It's one conversation. This whole long thing since they decided to chase after Binyamin and not give up. One long conversation. So the question is, now what? Right? So the question is, so we see the next verse is that Yosef's going to have to hold himself back, not be able to hold himself back anymore. The question is, what causes him not to hold back anymore? And what that indicates about his plan? Okay, so let's give the options. Okay, so what...
I was afraid that...
So let's go through the options in order. Okay, let's do the revenge plot. Let's do the one that's least likely first. Okay, revenge plot. So what happens is that Yosef decides, right? What does Yosef decide after he sees this whole thing? He decides that he can't go through with the revenge anymore because he's like, my brothers don't deserve it, right? Like they are. Maybe he initially wanted to take revenge, but now it's like, my brothers are completely faultless. They have gone above and beyond protecting Benjamin. So, like, that's it. time to reveal myself. Right? That's right. He didn't want to hold back anymore, then we're not time to reveal, right? That's one option.
Or maybe he got his revenge because he had them under him and fearing for their lives, and maybe he got some revenge.
Maybe he got enough revenge, right? He's flaked his thirst for revenge sufficiently. Another good option. So
I'm not a big subscriber of his revenge.
Right. Don't worry. We're just addressing them one at a time, the options. The next option is, let's go with the Ramban, fulfillment of the dreams option. Have the dreams been fulfilled yet? We've had all the brothers bow down. No. But
no.
Right, no, they're not all fulfilled yet. Father. Like, right, where's his father bowing down to him? Like, that's not here yet. Like, that failure, right? Yosef failed. According to the Ramban, Yosef failed his mission, his plan. Okay? So let's see, according to Hirsch, that the goal was to try and reframe the relationship between him and his brothers. Did he fulfill that already? Right? To mend the relationship and like make sure see his brothers aren't hating or like, you know, have better relationship amongst themselves. So the brothers that he's in front of him at least are willing to die for each other. So that's as strong of a bond as you could possibly wish for. Right? And perhaps you get a hint towards the way that Yaakov relates to the kids, because we finally hear, you know, Yehuda saying just how torn up Yaakov was about leaving, not only about how torn up he was about when Yosef was ripped to shreds, also about how torn up he was about how sad and how destroyed he was over Shimon's imprisonment, and also how he was like, you know, like you know, about to, like, you say he'd basically kill himself if he lost another son. So it seems to indicate that he really does, actually. Right, so as far as, right, so we see that Yosef's relationship with his, sorry, the brothers' relationship with each other, it seems to be rock solid, and it seems like Yaakov cares dearly about each and every one of his kids. So for that one also, it's all fulfilled. And let's say that, okay, so that was reversed. So it was reversed, now would be the right time to reveal himself. How about according to the Tshuva option of Barbanel? Did the brothers fully repent at this point?
I think they repented because they expressed that they did wrong and they're doing better now.
Right, same situation as before. They could have sold out their brother, given up. They don't. They stand by him and they try and protect him as much as they can. Right? That seems sounds like Tshuva to me. So we mentioned within the Ramban that maybe there was some greater plan in mind that Yosef was trying to do by following the dreams. Okay? So let me offer a variation on that. Okay? So we see that the loyal always have to pay, right? So notice that the refraining here isn't just about, you know, intellectual deciding that they're ready, but also that it's coupled with crying, right? And Yosef could not refrain himself before all of them to say, by me, cried, cause every man to go out from me, right? And and then everybody left. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians heard, and the house of Paro heard. And Yosef said to his brothers, I am Yosef, and my father is still alive. So the fact that there's so much emotion involved in Yosef's reveal and his crying, which we noticed before also, perhaps indicates that Yosef is not simply a, we have fulfilled whatever my thought process I had before, tshuva, we checked the box. So I would like to argue that maybe Yosef's plan wasn't fully fulfilled. And whichever plan it was, of any of the plans I mentioned before, maybe there was another step left in the tshuva process. Maybe there was more revenge that had to be that he could have exacted. Maybe there could have been a better way to improve the relationship between the brothers. But Yosef can't do it anymore, right? He's eating him up inside to do this to his brothers and his father. He just can't do it anymore. So my question is,
What if Yosef had the mental fortitude be of insane proportions? What would he have done?
If what?
If Yosef had the mental fortitude of a Vulcan, of a, insert your, of a robot, right? He is going to do logic. What logically makes sense. He's a cold-hearted, logical human being. So assuming that we managed, okay. Right, what would he have done?
There was also the fear that they would kill him and kill all of Egypt.
Right, so that is...
We're not talking about...
Right, so the Midrash says the reason why you're revealed... So that's what I'm actually separating out from the Midrashic interpretation is that the reason why Yosef revealed himself is exercising any of the opinions of the it's because the right, it's not right. So they say that the only reason why right, so the Midrash Rava, right, Kodarashi, the only reason why Yosef revealed himself is because he didn't want them to react violently and kill everybody in the area, like they did to Shem. So the only problem is that that's not what it looks like in the Pesukim. Right? So that is what the Midrash says, right? That was the reason why he revealed himself, is out of fear. But that doesn't look like fear in this case from the Pesukim. And according to the five approaches in the Parshanim that I gave, again, the Parshanim are arguing Midrash, not me. Right? But they're all saying that, no, it's not that he did it because he was afraid of Yosef running on a rampage. Rather, of Yehuda and the brothers, you know, rampaging and destroying everything. Rather, it's because he can't hold back. Emotionally, he can't hold back anymore. Or maybe it's the right time to reveal himself now. So if it's the right time to reveal himself, then the end. But I'd say that it's not the right time to reveal himself. Because normally, if you want to... According to your verse, I do not think he wanted to reveal himself bursting out crying. That's not the reveal he wanted with his brothers. Right? If you want to show a point of strength, you want to like reset your relationship, you're saying it as being breakdown crying isn't going to do it. If you're trying to exact revenge, that's a really weird aha moment. If the ruler just breaks out sobbing, it doesn't really quite have the same feel to it in terms of the giving the full revenge. And as far as, let's say the Ramban just says, well, he wanted to make sure that Yaakov would also come bow down to him. Well, Yaakov's not going to come bow down with the brothers. Now, is he? So this is just another option. That Yosef's plan was he was trying to fulfill the dreams. Why? Because he didn't want the brothers to know who he was ever. Right? Yosef planned on holding himself back till the very day he died. He was going to remain in silence the whole way through. That was his plan. Right? His goal was to either get his revenge, to have his brothers do tshuva, right? To fix the relationships. But where was Yosef going to be? Yosef would be sitting as vizier in Egypt, and the Jews would be elsewhere. So why would Yosef want to do that? Right, because Yosef may have thought that he was beyond all saving. And he thought the last thing that he could do to make right with his family was to at least fix their problem, right? He doesn't deserve to be part of the family anymore. He knows that he messed up. But at the very least, he's got the power to fix his family. He should at least try that. But then Yosef chooses not to, right? Meaning, not that he chooses not to, he can't, right? He knows that the best thing for the family is for them to never know who he is. And why do I say that? Because when we look at Yosef's plan, he says, oh, I'm going to hide you guys out in Goshen. We'll be fine. I'll feed you. You can go back afterwards. Right? That's Yosef's plan. Right? He wanted to simply have them come down to Goshen. I'll support you and you go back afterwards. But what actually happens? Verse 16. The report was heard in Pharaoh's house saying, Yosef's brothers had come and it pleased Pharaoh well and his servants. Right, so everything until now was in the hands of Yosef. But what happens once Yosef reveals himself? Who gets involved? Paro. Right now, Paro is running the show, not Yosef, but Paro. Right, the Paro says, bring them. Right? And not only that, he has...
You're freezing.
What?
Rabbi, you're freezing.
Okay, I'll try that again. So, the brother, right, so please. Paro takes charge. Instead of Yosef running the show, now Paro is. And since Paro is running the show, Paro is going to choose...
Yes.
Could you get cup and peas, please?
Yes, you
want. Okay. Right, so what's the brother's... Right, so... There. And then as far as the plan of Paro is, so Paro's plan is he wants them there, but he doesn't want them to leave. Here. Here, I'm sorry. I have to skip the names. Here we go. 1 second. You have Yosef telling the brothers before they go see Paro. Remember, you guys are shepherds. You're shepherds. Okay, that's this paragraph over here. When he finds, like, that's what he says to his family, he hasn't seen them in years. Remember, you guys are shepherds. And then when they finally end up meeting Paro, Paro suggests, 1 second.
You're freezing again.
Yeah, I see that.
That's it. I'll see you in a minute.
Elaine.
Yeah, now he's frozen.
Mazel tov. Mazel tov.
Thank you. I'm her grandmother.
Oh,
yeah, I'm sure you're related.
Okay, 1 second. Let's try and fix my Wi-Fi. 1 second.
Did you know when you were in Israel earlier this year?
Did I know what?
She was pregnant.
No.
Oops. Wonderful news. We're so happy for you guys.
Thank you.
Sorry, Rabbi. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
This is being
recorded. Okay, good. Okay.
Clear.
Okay. So maybe I cut out there. Okay. So Paro says, right? So Paro says that if there's any of you guys are strong, I want you to be the in charge of my flock. Right, and note that everywhere throughout to the end, Paro is in charge, and right, he determines whether they come or they go. And when we get to the end, and when Yosef is trying to bury Yaakov, he needs to beg permission from Paro to go bury his father. Right, and we also see that Yosef gives up on going back to Israel. Right, and says that we're going to live here till the end. So my suggestion is that why did Yosef not reveal himself? Because he knew the future. Why didn't he see the future? What? Right? He had a plan, right?
He was a prophet. He knew God's plan to a certain extent.
Right. You could say he's a Navi, or you could say that simply he's that brilliant, right? One or the other. Both are completely valid things to say about Yosef, right? He had prophetic dreams, and he's also smart enough to interpret them and bring them into reality. So that's what Yosef wanted. Okay, I'm going to stop sharing. I'll explain that outside. Okay, so Yosef had a plan, right? He was hoping to save all the Jews without them ever knowing who he is. The only problem with his plan is that if he saved them and that if he wanted to properly save them, they would never know who he was, ever. And if they ever found out, it would ruin the whole plan, right? He had to be, undercover agent till his death. But Yosef can't handle it, right? He knows intellectually that's the way to go, but emotionally, right, he can't bear to never, he sees his parents, he sees that his brothers have, come back full circle and repented, and he sees that there's hope for him to again be part of the family, and he simply can't give up on that. Right, and in the end, we do wind up spending 200 plus years as in Egypt, most of which is slaves. But the question is that a bad thing? Is that a worthwhile trade to have Yosef and the tribe of Ephraim and Manasseh? If Yosef's plan has succeeded and he had been able to hold himself back, we may not have had two tribes of Israel. Jewish history would not be Jewish history as we know it. because we'd be missing a large portion of it. We'd be missing Yosef. And would that be Jewish history that we want? So thankfully, Yosef did have emotions. And he was overcome at the right time and revealed himself, which allowed the Jews to once again become the 12 tribes. Okay, feel free to ask any questions.
I have a question.
Sure.
Do you think that it was Yosef's plan or Hashem's plan for Yosef not to reveal himself?
I believe it was potentially both. Meaning, in order for Yosef's near here, what God's plan was, what happened in the end is God's plan. So, like, that's a little, I know it's a little cheating, but like, that's kind of how it has to be. But if the dreams had been fulfilled exactly as they seemed in that sequence, the only way to have it fully done properly is for Yosef to not know who Yosef is, or they won't all bow to him. Because, like, you're never gonna get everybody to bow to Yosef if they know who he is. Right? That's not going to happen.
But what if just held off until Yaakov came, not knowing who Yosef was, and for Yaakov to bow down, wouldn't that have fulfilled the dream?
It would have fulfilled the dream, but I would argue that while it may have fulfilled the dream, it wouldn't have, what is the purpose of the dream? Is the goal to have the Jews be in the best situation possible? So I would say that arguably the best situation for the Jews is to not wind up being in Egypt for 200 years as slaves. Right? I would argue that that's not the, if you want to say the best possible solution, that would not be it. Best possible solution would be for the Jews to survive the famine and then be able to continue living on in Israel. The 200 years of slavery is not it might not be a necessary portion. I mean, Shira's arguing that she thinks that it was necessary for them to become a people, but I would say that you could have another in order to have your people become a people. You don't need to. It's not, people don't only become a nation because they were slaves. There's other ways to become a nation besides that. Again.
Yeah, but he must have known. He must have known that God said that to his grandfather. To his great-grandfather, that they were going to be slaves in Egypt.
So the answer to that
he knew the plan.
No, so the Brit Ben Abitarim, this is a little bit aside. So the Brit Ben Abitarim doesn't say where they're going to be slaves.
Right? Oh, okay. But
there's two separate conditions given in the Brit Ben Abitarim. One is that it'll be 400 years. The other one is that it'll be in four generations. And then they'll be able, and then they will be in a foreign land, and then they will be afflicted, and then they will be able to return. So I believe Rav Elchanan Samet, as well as others, can't remember who else, I know that he for sure says it in his book, that there was a potential, right, that the Brit Mila term is flexible, right? Shortest time frame is four generations, longest time frame is 400 years. What ends up actually being the time frame is only ends up being like around 200 or so years. Right, the full time frame, right? Between,
yeah.
Right, the only 200 years of slavery.
400 from the birth of Isaac.
Right. So he suggests that it could have all been fulfilled simply in the time of Yosef, right? Yosef is the fourth generation. Right? Yosef and his brothers are the fourth generation, correct?
Yes.
What was Yaakov for 14 years in the house of Laban? He was a slave.
Before that, yeah.
Right? We have Arami Oved Avi, right? The Aramean tribe to kill my father, right? So we have Yaakov being oppressed and enslaved for a number of years while they're in Egypt. While they're in Aram. So it's possible that it could have been fulfilled already, potentially, if the Jews were worthy at that point. Evidently they're not, which is why the story continues. But the potential was that if the brothers, right, Yaakov and the brothers had been worthy at that point, the story could have ended potentially there. Right? It could have simply grown naturally as a nation in Israel, not have had to be in Egypt whatsoever, because we already had fulfilled the suffering by having by going to Aram. So therefore, we could have had our nation-forming event. Yeah, we all suffered by the hand of Laban for 20 years, right? And now, right now, we're all better for it, and we should be a united front. But they weren't.
But that was just Yaakov who suffered.
Not just Yaakov. Rachel and Leah say that our father-in-law treated us as if we were strangers.
Okay.
Right? But so Eretz Nochriya, right? Remember the phrase in Eretz Nochriya, and they're being treated like they're strangers, even though they're technically in their father's house. So again, Rav Zalman argues it way more, again, that would take much longer to explain. But the point being is that there is that the Brit Ben Hadassar wasn't necessarily have to be 400 years. It could have been shorter, and depending on how you calculated it, it actually was shorter. So they're saying that it's potential, like, and also all those years weren't in slavery. So again, it could have been that they'd have spent, you know, 200 years in Israel, just not as slaves, and just, you know, like slowly building up to nationhood. That was the other option that we could have had. And yes, God always references Yom Mitzrayim because, well, that's the biggest thing that occurred to us. But you wouldn't have needed God to have said, oh, I can go to Egypt, instead of saying, like, I have been supported. It could have been replaced with God who supported us from the time that we were simply a family of, you know, 12 till we became a nation of hundreds of thousands. Like, it could have, you could have switched that in for that, and it'd been just, it would have worked just fine, potentially. Obviously, again, this didn't happen in history, just a theory.
So is this your own theory, or is there someone else who supports what you're saying?
No, no, this is my own theory based off of based off of what could have happened. I didn't see anybody else saying, nobody else really addressing the question of what if. The closest is the Ramban, who says that he didn't fulfill the full plan, but nobody actually fully fleshes out the what if question. So hence I had to see what I could think of for what if, and I thought that was a potential option. Somebody else has heard of somebody else with another option for what if, let me know, but I feel like I'm allowed to answer a what if question that didn't exist prior. If I construct a new question, I can answer it how I wish, I think. If I made up the question, I can make up my own answer too. So I hope everybody, you know, appreciates the answer and like, right, again, take it or leave it. It's not shot. It's my own midrash, so to speak. It's a question that I had, and then like that's, yeah. So the other option is that you're like, there is no what if. This is exactly what it meant to be, but the text looks like there could have been another option if you hadn't held back. So. Yeah. Any other questions?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
Question?
Yes.
Okay. So, not question. It's more like observation. So beyond this, and we look at the part where you say where they're Mitzrayim, all the brothers are Mitzrayim, and then you go to the part where you mentioned that Yosef has to beg to about burying Yaakov.
Yes.
So. It's fascinating how quickly Paro, after having like pulled the rug out from under Yosef, is able to, I'm not enslave them, but begin to enslave them, begin to oppress them so quickly. Or it seems to be so quickly anyway.
Right.
But it's like he was good to have his one Jew. His one Jew, you know, like some of my best friends are Jewish. He was good to have his one Jew who was quiet, who was behaved. But now all his family came. It's like, you know, he has this one, like, for instance, forgive me, modern Orthodox looking Jew, let's say, okay, who fits in, who blends in. Now all his Hasidic relatives come and he's like, okay, forget it. We didn't want that kind. And now the whole enslavement starts.
I mean, I would argue it's a little bit different. I would argue when as follows, okay. First, he has this one brilliant, amazing person who can do literally anything and nothing can stop him. All of a sudden, I find out that I have 11 more of them. Not only 11 more of them, they're a family of 70. So wait, I can multiply my one amazing vizier who literally saved my entire country from ruin times 70.
oh my God, my life is amazing. I will never let these people go ever. It's like stumbling on the biggest jackpot ever. You are never letting that go ever.
So then you make them into slaves? Is this like an alien race invading you?
Okay, so that, yeah, I'll get to that when we get to smoke. But that's a different rate line of paros. That's not this paro. This paro very much likes his Jews, and he is not letting them go no matter what.
Okay, so the next paro says they're too smart, so this is what we're going to do to them to get them down on the farm.
Correct. If you're afraid of an element, it's
oppress it.
You oppress it until you can control it. If you're afraid of them, then if you're afraid of the Jews, then you start doing weird things that are counterintuitive. But Paro and San Jose really liked the Jews and did not want them to leave ever. That's my assertion and assumption.
Okay.
There's a repeating theme for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What?
Where we get accepted by a nation and we get put into high esteem and then we stick our heads out too much and then somebody wants to chop it off. Turn us into slaves or, turn us into whatever we're not.
Right.
He set the pace.
Right. If you look later on, Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch says that Paro had the blueprint for how to oppress the Jews. He goes through the whole story and he's, time and time again, he was the first one and everybody follows his plan for generations.
Yes. Well, unfortunately so, yes. Okay, so again, not that at the time, Yosef wanted to head off the whole thing happening by pretending that he's the only magical, amazing Yosef and there's nobody else like him. But once somebody found out there's other Jews, it got messy and complicated. So Yosef wanted to avoid it. He couldn't. Again, better that we have Yosef. Again, probably worthwhile trade, I would argue, to have Yosef and his family as part of the Jewish people. But again, still, that is the price that we had to pay to have Yosef.
Another question, Chaim.
So as far as you mentioned before about what Tzadikim saying coming through. So yeah, they really all did have to become slaves because of what they said, right? The brothers said, "We'll all become slaves for what you did for what Benjamin did in terms of whoever took the goblet," and they all became slaves. Hmm. Yeah. Yes, Mom.
Okay. So you started talking about Vayitapek, Vayitapek. The only thing kept on popping into my head, maybe it's wrong, I don't know. It was Vayitapek Haman. Did I make that up? Is that a thing? Did Haman also have that Vayitapek, or did I make that up?
Let me do a quick search just to confirm. Vayitapek, searching, variant forms, and everything. Let's see what we get. Yes. And that's the Barakiah. Vayitapek Haman, yes, he held himself correct. That's an Esther here. I'll bring it up in here.
How many other times does it say Vayitapek now that you brought it up?
I can do an exact search for the root.
Sorry, I don't know. Just that particular phrase.
I'm
off topic. I'm sorry.
Here, one second. I'm doing a search on. One second. Sorry. You need to do a root search. One second. Ein, hey, kuf, root, one second. What? Aleph, yes, I wrote Aleph. I said I am sorry. And search all databases. Okay, one second. So, it comes up 18 times. It comes up in the context of, no, that's the king. A lot of times the place, Afeka. Comes up in Shmuel. It comes up. It's relatively rare. It comes up like less than like 8 times.
Okay, for another time.
Another time, yes. Correct.
In stuff, in stuff that is familiar to me. Vayta Pekamot. So that comes up every year.
He also opens himself back in his anger against Mordechai after he had to lead him to the streets. Okay. Right. So those times when he held himself back. So that's why, you know, Haman didn't, you know, kill himself back then, and then instead he did it, had his other plan afterwards with, you know, hanging.
All right, no problem. Unrelated. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
You are correct. There's a lot of problems between Yosef and Yosef's story and Yul's Esther, which we will save for her own time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get.
No, it's fine. Good question. I know we're a bit over time, but it's fine. Right. So.
All right.
Okay, so if anybody has to go, feel free. I'm happy to field any question anybody has. Again, no emotions to ground. I know it's late, so whatever works for everybody. Okay, so feel free to ask any. I'm happy to answer any and all questions on this or anything else. So, yes. So. Yes. So right. So we had the pattern of Jewish history, right? So that was Sfarna mentioned that you know he wanted to fulfill the dream so that way the Jewish history would turn out the right way. So seemingly God interfered with that happening, right? Yeah, Yosef wanted to show that we're always in charge and we're not susceptible. Yet God did not
have a plan.
That was not the plan. So.
You know what they say? We make plans and God left.
That's true. No, I'm not sure that we actually don't see what God says in this whole segment. So it's like we see what, you know, Yosef thinks that, you know, is God's plan. We see what the brothers think is God's plan, but right? We know that God says go to Egypt, but basically all he says. So
okay.
A little unclear, but okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, importantly, we see him take us out of Egypt.
Correct. So. We get out of Egypt too. Correct. Well, a lot to say about that as well. Okay. Also, before I close, I just want to remind everybody that next week we will not be meeting because next week is Tanakh in a day. By Ben Dresser Fondo. So please tune in for that. Information should be sent out in the show bulletins. If not, please feel free to message me. And I will send you the information if you can't find it through some other manner. Again, that's going to be, you know, next Sunday morning as well as Sunday evening. I was a break in the afternoon. That way we'll, you know, be able to, you know, go through Tanakh as a book of healing. So hopefully good stories in Tanakh, and that'll be next time.